Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I want to say thank you once again for taking time out of your busy life to join me on the broadcast. Today is Thursday, October 15th, 2020, and I'm continuing on my very special series on Remembering Rouhani. Today is part four. It's a very, very important program today. I will be sharing to you from my book, Rouhani, A Beautiful Fragrance, and reading to you the story of the traumatic rape scene that Rouhani endured more than, my gosh, 13 years ago. And it transformed her life. She spent the next 7 years in prison, being tortured and interrogated by the Iranian regime, trying to force her to change her story and say that she wasn't raped. We have a lot of ground to cover this morning. I want to read to you this very powerful chapter from my book, Rouhani, A Beautiful Fragrance. This is chapter 5, entitled The Crime of Self-Defense. Saturday, July 7th. 2007 was one of the hottest days of summer in Tehran. It was a day that women dreaded to go out publicly wearing a hijab and literally melting in the sun. The Islamic dress code had no mercy on women. Today, Rouhani was overwhelmed with anticipation and excitement. Dr. Sarbandi had called her at work and set up a rendezvous time to meet her at 6 p.m. in front of her office building. It had been almost 3 months since the last time they had met at Nasser Ice Cream Parlor. Finally, the day had arrived. Rouhani was very optimistic in negotiating a deal with the good doctor. She felt especially encouraged because today was Saturday, the seventh day of the month. Rouhani was intrigued with the number seven. It was the seventh day of the month of the seventh year, 2007. She believed that because of the ominous arrangements of the sevens, that the heavens released a special force and energy. The number seven to Rouhani was a holy number. God created the heavens and earth in 7 days. A week is equal to 7 days. There are seven layers of earth and sky. Seven was the number of completion in the book of Revelation. Today may be my lucky day, Rouhani mumbled to herself with a joyful smile on her face. She took another gulp of tea and leaned back in her chair. It was lunchtime and she could hardly wait until 6 p.m. The last conversation that she had with Dr. Sarbandi, he had mentioned that he was busy importing medical supplies and equipment to put in his new office. Then he promised her that if he was satisfied with the way that she designed his new office, then he would commission her for the printing task. Dr. Sarbandi had mentioned that he was negotiating with someone else, and Rouhani insisted that he give all of his tasks to her. At the conclusion of their meeting, Rouhani asked Dr. Sarbandi for his mobile number in case she was late, and he willingly gave it to her. Rouhani took a nervous deep breath and glanced down at her watch. It was exactly 6 p.m., anxiously waiting outside of her office. The last time she had waited in vain, and tonight Rouhani was praying that it wouldn't happen again. A cool breeze blew across her forehead, bringing a breath of relief after an oppressive hot day. Suddenly, a black Toyota sped around the corner and parked up against the curb in front of the office. It was Dr. Sarbandi. Dr. Sarbandi leaned across the seat and clicked open the passenger door. Rouhani quickly grabbed the handle and sat down on the passenger side next to the doctor. She immediately noticed that Mr. Shiki was not in the car, and Dr. Sarbandi was alone this time. That's odd, Rouhani thought to herself as she put her purse down in the seat and relaxed. The radio was playing one of her favorite Persian songs entitled Hang In There by the Iranian artist Feridun. I love this song, Rouhani exclaimed as she got comfortable in her seat. Dr. Sarbandi smiled and pulled the car away from the curb and back out into the street. After they had driven a few blocks, he pulled up in front of an outdoor cafe. A short man dressed in a gray suit opened up the back door and got in. It was Mr. Shiki. Sir, please, you can have my seat, Rouhani insisted. No, ma'am. I will sit here, Mr. Shiki replied. Dr. Sarbandi drove down the heavily trafficked street and turned the corner. He had only driven a few blocks before pulling over in an alleyway. Both Dr. Sarbandi and Mr. Shiki got out of the car and began talking amongst themselves. Rouhani struggled to hear their conversation, but was unable to make out what they were saying to each other. After a few minutes, they both shook hands, and Dr. Sarbandi returned to the car. He drove another block and then turned down the Shati Street, pulling into a pharmacy shop around the corner. I must purchase a few items for my aunt. I will be right back, Dr. Sarbandi explained, and then he exited the car. Rouhani took a deep breath and tried to relax. She glanced at her watch. It was 6:20 p.m. She sighed in frustration. She realized that she was going to be late. Sholi had asked her to be home at 7 p.m. for dinner. Rouhani had promised her to be on time. The meeting with Dr. Sarbandi this evening was so important. She had waited several weeks. Surely Mum will understand, Rouhani rationalized within herself. After a few minutes, Dr. Sarbandi returned with an orange plastic bag and quickly got inside of the car. I'm sorry for the delay. I promise I won't keep you long, Dr. Sarbandi assured her. Rouhani smiled and nodded her head. Soon the Toyota had turned on to Murdamad Street. The sun was beginning to dip below the horizon. Soon it would be sunset. The oppressive heat had diminished, and the evening was beginning to feel much cooler. The black Toyota came to rest in front of the governor's building. A security guard came up to the window. Dr. Sarbandi asked him to take care of his automobile. Rouhani was astonished. Who is this man? She thought to herself, that a security guard takes orders from him. She felt a cold chill rush through her body and was very curious about the man that she had met almost 3 months ago. Exiting the Toyota, Dr. Sarbandi and Rouhani entered a 10-story building. Walking through a quiet lobby, together they entered an elevator. Dr. Sarbandi pushed the fifth floor button. He wiped the sweat from off of his forehead with a handkerchief and kept staring ahead. He was unusually quiet. Rouhani felt her heart begin to beat faster. She was nervous, apprehensive, wondering exactly what to expect next. The elevator arrived at the fifth floor. They walked together straight ahead, arriving at a door in the corridor. The corridor was quiet. There were no pictures on the wall or plants by the windows for decorations. It appeared to be a dirty, deserted building that they had both entered into. Dr. Servandi removed a key from his pocket and unlocked the door. He stepped inside with his back up against the door and allowed Rahane to walk inside first. Rahane stood inside and gazed around at what appeared to be an empty room. As she walked, she heard a clicking sound made by her shoes that echoed, because the room was devoid of any furniture that would normally be inside of an office. She was immediately shocked by what she was observing. The room didn't appear to look like an office at all. It was dirty. It was musty looking. There was a table near the door with a few chairs around it. Rahane removed her purse and carefully sat down on one of the chairs while Dr. Servandi put his keys back into the pocket and closed the door. "Please make yourself comfortable," Dr. Servandi said. An eerie and unsettled feeling gripped Rahane's heart. She couldn't relax. She looked carefully at the table in front of her. On the table were another set of keys, a knife stand, two small glasses, and a flower pot. "Please relax, Rahane. You may take off your hijab," Dr. Servandi calmly suggested as he walked past the table and into the kitchen. Rahane could feel beads of sweat roll down her face from inside of her hijab. She was afraid to remove it. Instead, she nervously gazed around the room. In the corner was a television. Next to the television was a dirty old couch covered with a blanket. Rahane also noticed a prayer rug in the center of the room. Dr. Servandi returned with two glasses of fruit juice. He quickly gulped down his juice and handed the other glass to Rahane. He then unbuttoned the collar of his white shirt, complaining about the heat. "Go ahead and drink," Dr. Servandi urged her. Rahane sat the glass down on the table in front of her. Her hand began to tremble. Racing thoughts flashed through her mind. She could feel her heart begin to race again. Her mouth became dry from anxiety, but she was afraid to take a drink of the fruit juice. She looked toward the door. "Was it locked?" she muttered to herself. Rahane inhaled and took a nervous, deep breath. "Dr. Servandi isn't a dangerous man," she rationalized to herself. "He will sit down in a minute and we will begin our negotiations." While Dr. Servandi returned to the kitchen to dispose of his glass, Rahane seized the opportunity to get up and inspect the mysterious room on the fifth floor. She walked over to the window, gazing down at the street below. "It's much too high up to jump from," she reasoned within herself. Walking toward the center of the living room, she glanced over toward the couch again and noticed that a bed sheet had been spread upon it. Fear gripped Rahane's heart. She suddenly felt trapped with no place to run. Sweat began to roll down her face once again. A feeling of absolute helplessness raced through her mind, putting a death grip on her soul. Dr. Servandi slowly walked toward her, dangling a small rubber packet in front of her face. "Do you know what this is?" he asked with a sinister smile on his face. Rahane was covered in sweat. Dr. Servandi's black eyes penetrated to the very core of her being. He inched closer to her. Suddenly, Rahane bolted up from her chair, energized from a burst of courage. She lunged through the door and struggled to open it. Her hands were slick from sweat. The doorknob seemed impossible to open. "Where are you going?" Dr. Servandi sarcastically asked. "You can only leave here when I want you to go." Rahane turned around and fell backwards against the door. Dr. Servandi inched closer until she could feel his hot breath against her face. He looked bigger as he moved closer. Rahane felt small and helpless. He began to pull at her collar. Rahane immediately retaliated, scratching his face with her long fingernails. Dr. Servandi moved backwards, covering his face with his hands. Then, without warning, he clasped both of his arms around Rahane's waist, gripping her tightly. "Are you able to escape from here, so you think?" he challenged Rahane while gripping her tightly in his arms. Dr. Servandi pressed his face up against hers. I will allow you to go when I want. Dr. Serbandi tightened his grip upon Rouhani. Let me go, Rouhani pleaded, struggling to break free of his grip. I will leave here and will not tell anyone about this. Just let me go. Dr. Serbandi leaned towards Rahane's face and tried to kiss her. At that moment, she managed to finally break free and punched him in the stomach. Quickly recovering from the punch, Dr. Serbandi lifted up Rahane in the air and then dropped her down on the floor. Rouhani struggled to scream, but only managed a whimper. Her voice was paralyzed by the shock of what was happening. Dr. Serbandi was now kneeling beside Rouhani. He put both of his hands on her waist and began massaging her. Rouhani was petrified. You are stuck now, Dr. Serbandi chuckled with a triumphant tone in his voice. I am going to take care of you. With one hand, he grabbed Rahane's waist, and with the other, he pulled back her hair. No one is here. No one can hear you, he chuckled. Terror gripped Rahane's heart. Guilt paralyzed her soul. Why had she been so naive in trusting a strange man? Why had she been so gullible? Sweat rolled down her cheeks. Her heart was pounding out of her chest. Then she saw the knife. Her eyes fixated upon the shiny small knife that was laying on the table. Dr. Serbandi followed the gaze of Rahane's eye and noticed she was staring at the knife. Suddenly, he stopped pulling on her hair and relaxed for a minute, gasping for breath. Then he broke into a sarcastic laugh. What? Are you going to stab me? He laughed. Dr. Serbandi sat back on his knees, removing his hands from Rahane's body. Go ahead, do it, Serbandi taunted Rahane. Dr. Serbandi stood up and turned his back away from Rahane. Rahane's whole body was shaking from fear. Go ahead, do it, Serbandi shouted once again as he continued to tempt and taunt her. He walked back into the living room toward the prayer rug. Realizing this was her only chance to escape, Rouhani stood up from the floor and bolted towards the kitchen. She threw open the balcony door and looked down, tempted to jump. She froze in fear. Then she gazed back at the kitchen table, fixing her eyes once again on the knife. Rouhani reached down on the table and picked up the knife with her right hand. Her hand was trembling as she clutched the tiny knife. Dr. Serbandi began to move toward Rouhani once again. Then he abruptly turned his back and began taunting her again. Oh, come on, stab me. Rouhani held the knife in her trembling right hand. Tears filled her eyes. Why are you pretending? Dr. Serbandi sarcastically asked, spinning around and now facing her. Go on, do it. He screamed and then laughed as he began walking towards her. You want to stab me with that? Dr. Serbandi chuckled, pointing at the tiny knife. Please, let me go, Rouhani nervously pleaded, pointing the knife at him. Dr. Serbandi burst into laughter and then turned around to walk away. All of her life, Rouhani had never hurt or harmed anyone. She was compassionate, forgiving, and merciful. But now, at this moment, it was as if another power had seized control of her mind and emotions. She felt as if she was dangling from the edge of a cliff. She felt suffocated and trapped, like she had been stuffed inside of a trunk, and now she was desperately trying to claw her way out of it. In desperation and fear, she lifted up the knife as Dr. Serbandi began to walk away and plunged it deep inside of his back, near his left shoulder. Immediately, Dr. Serbandi screamed in pain. Rouhani clasped both of her hands around her mouth in fear. She couldn't believe what she had just done. Dr. Serbandi staggered and moaned as blood began gushing out from his back. He collapsed down on the floor, breathing heavily and withering in pain. Then he reached down with his right hand and pulled the knife from out of his back. Rouhani had stabbed him in the back just a few inches below his left shoulder. There were bladdered blood stains on both the mirror and the fan. Picking up the knife in anger, Dr. Serbandi threw it toward Rouhani. Then he stood back up, staggering to his feet. Rahane relocated the knife on the floor and once again clutched it in her right hand. Dr. Serbandi grabbed tightly onto the chair in order to maintain his balance. His hands were drenched in blood. He was extremely weak and in shock. Suddenly, with all of his remaining strength, he picked up the chair and hurled it towards Rahane in an outburst of rage and anger. The chair missed Rahane and landed in the corner, breaking into pieces. Panic-stricken, Rahane bolted toward the front door and began pounding her fist against it, screaming for help. In the midst of her screaming, the door abruptly swung open. To Rahane's utter amazement, Mr. Shaky stood on the other side of the door, his eyes bulging in astonishment. "What's going on here?" Mr. Shaky demanded, his voice cracking in fear. Rahane didn't answer, but instead pushed Mr. Shaky out of the way and ran quickly out of the open door. She raced past the elevators and instead began running down the flight of stairs. Gasping for breath, Rahane finally arrived on the first floor, and without hesitation, she bolted out of the front entrance into the street. Grabbing her cell phone out of her pocket, she promptly called the paramedics and explained what had happened. Rahane had begun the day feeling very optimistic and positive. The number 7 had seemed to be a magical blessing that was going to bring her happiness and prosperity. However, the number 7 had not been a blessing, but it had instead turned out to be a curse, an unbelievable nightmare that had forced her to make a choice that would forever alter the course of her life. I took the time to read to you word for word from my book, Rahane, A Beautiful Sacrifice, on Chapter 5, The Crime of Self-Defense. Now, why is it called The Crime of Self-Defense? In most cases here, let's say for instance in the United States, if self-defense can be proven in, let's say, a murder, if the person can be justified with using a weapon to defend him or herself in the case of an attacker breaking into their home, in the case of an attacker attacking them out in the street, and they are able to have a gun because they have a permit for that gun, and they are able to carry it, there's no law against that, and then they shoot the person attacking them, there will be an investigation. But if it can be demonstrated that the person, him or her, acted in legitimate self-defense, whether at their home or out in public, there is a very good chance that that person will be exonerated and let go. There will be no charges put against that person because it can be demonstrated that it was not a crime of murder or premeditation, but self-defense. Now, there are many factors, of course, that will go into this. Was there an eyewitness, et cetera, et cetera? The two persons will be examined very, very in depth. If the person didn't survive and was killed, there will be family investigations. A background check will be made on the person who committed the assault. And so many factors will be taken into consideration, but in a court here, let's say in the United States, with a fair and balanced jury, a fair and balanced judge, let's say, the person will probably be able to go free. But I call this the crime of self-defense because in Iran, in order to prove a rape attack, a rape, you have to have four witnesses according to Sharia law. Now, of course, in the case of this man and woman, they're both alone. So in a country like Iran with very strong Islamic laws, Sharia law, and you have a man and a woman there, 9 times out of 10, because the woman has such a low status as a woman in a Sharia law country, her story will not be believed. That was the case of Rahane. Remember, I said that the testimony of a woman is only worth that half that of a man. The testimony of a woman is only worth half that of a man. So here we have the case of Rahane. And instead of believing her story, instead of saying that, you know, this is a girl that was lured up to this apartment and was attacked, she was lured under false pretenses, right? Instead, She is arrested and interrogated, and then eventually she is found guilty of murder. Why? Well, number one, she's a woman living in Iran. But number two, the man that she stabbed, and forever there will be this question mark of how this man died, because this Mr. Shecky came in. We don't know if he died of that stab wound. Maybe Mr. Shecky finished the job. We don't know. But because this man was a former member of the Ministry of Intelligence, his reputation is on the line. He was stabbed by a woman, so surely he had nothing to do with this. He's a government man, or was active in the government intelligence. So guess whose story is going to be believed? Well, the victim is going to be, you know, is not going to be exonerated. Rahane is not going to be given any exoneration. She's not going to be cleared. This man's reputation is first and foremost. And so you need to understand this as you listen to my story. You need to understand the circumstances immediately was against Rahane. She didn't have a fair trial. She stabbed in self-defense a man who tried to rape her, which is a honorable thing for a woman to do. She has every right to defend herself. But remember, she lived in Iran. She lived in a male-dominated culture. And so sadly, for the next 7 years, Rahane was tortured and interrogated. They did everything to try to make her to surrender her original story and to change it, and largely because of the status of the man that she stabbed. It's a very tragic and sad story. But today on The Cross in the Desert, we have taken you behind the scenes so that you can understand the plight of Iranian women. You can understand that Iranian women have very little chance of survival in these circumstances. There have been many other women raped in Iran that have taken their lives because they know there's no hope for them in the Iranian court, because they know that their stories will not be believed. So Rahane is not the only story in Iran with these kinds of circumstances. Her story became worldwide famous because of all the attention. But today, I encourage you to continue to be a voice for this dear woman, to really dedicate yourself to stand for her honor. The best way you can do that is to go up to Amazon.com and to purchase my book, Rahane, A Beautiful Fragrance. It's available in paperback and Kindle. I don't do this to make book sales. I want you to be blessed to read a story that will change your life and to be a voice for Iranian women. And so many of my good friends have bought this book, and their lives have been challenged and transformed. Now, next Monday, we will go to a very special reading of my book, and I hope you will be there as we continue this very special program series on remembering Rahane. I want to say thank you for joining me today. God bless you, and have a great week, and I will see you again on Monday.